Vaikari Khan Mano Jajne Deva Vaikarika Dasha Digvatarka Pacheto Svi Vahindro Pindra Mitraka. Okay, I can remember some of the word by word meanings even like that. Okay, then to go ahead to slide number 4, we have a translation, and it says, Srila Prabhupada says, from the mode of goodness, the mind is generated and becomes manifest as the 10 demigods controlling the bodily movements. Such demigods are known as 1. The controller of directions, the controller of air, the sun god, the father of Daksha Prajapati, the Ashvini Kumars, the fire god, the king of heaven, the worshipable deity in heaven, the chief of the Adityas, and Bhamaji, the Prajapati, all come into existence. Wow. This is interesting. One time we attended a program in Texas organized by the Isthmus Foundation, and their idea was to make a isthmus, a little bridge between science and spirituality or religion. And it was a pretty good foundation, you know. And it was interesting because most of the members were doctors, because doctors kind of have to deal with, you know, real people and death and birth and old age and disease and, you know, human beings on one side. And the other side, they have to be scientists, you know. So one of the people they had presenting was Vin DeLorean, and he was an American Indian, and he was also a professor of law, a law professor at the University of Arizona. And he was talking about, of course, science, and he was talking about, he say, you white guys, you Europeans, you know, Northern Europeans, and some people identify especially the predominant culture is Northern German culture. He said, your people have always been very good metal workers. And he was saying, like, you know, when you came, we saw that you had an iron horse, a talking wire, and all this kind of stuff, you know. So even now, of course, all this big computer industry with microchips and stuff is still high-tech metal work. So different, you know, your people have always been metal workers. And he also said that in these wars, we can see that you Americans, you know, even in amongst your own tribal warfare with your other guys in Europe, you've always been blessed by sky gods. So we had heard that Americans were always getting kind of, you know, many times they weren't doing so well on the ground against these European guys who were just so accustomed, you know, to wars and just grew up in that atmosphere. But we were really winning because we had superior air power, you know. So, this is, and then he was talking then about, like, you know, the whole development of the philosophy of nature. What is nature? What is the cosmos? Why does it work? Who are we? You know, what can we accomplish? Can we become immortal? Yeah. Can we fly in the air? Okay. Yeah. So he was talking about the American Indian, you know, point of view. And he said, if you gave this kind of description that scientists are doing about, you know, how life is created and everything else to like a Navajo, you know, shaman, medicine man, you know, Brahmin guy, he would listen to you and he would say something like, well, you know, it might just work if you add one crow and what is it? One turtle, like that. You know, so atoms, molecules, Big Bang, quantum theory, and one turtle and one crow. Okay, maybe it was a fox rather than a turtle, like that. So you got to have these kind of these bigger forms, you know. So right away we're getting into this thing about, you know, there are 10 demigods controlling the bodily movements, you know? And it's not like the way it's being described like this to us, our point of view, our very German mentality, it has to be one way, broken down into boxes, every connection very clear, only one name. But there appears to be a lot of names for the same things, the same three things, and it can be seen from different points of view. You know? And even if you want to get into it, the atom, you know, the kind of the heart of Western science, there's different models. You know, Niels Bohr had his model. I think Einstein had his. Then in more recent times, Fermi was famous for his model. Because nobody ever seen an atom. An atom is not an empirical entity. You know, an atom is based upon speculation, based upon empirical experience. Yeah, and highly speculative. And so, of course, the soul is also, nobody's ever seen the soul, but what we can speculate about is existence. So what's the difference between the atom and the soul? And that, if you want to talk about hard evidence. So it goes on like this. Let's go to slide number 5. And here we have a little bit of a review of the previous verses to put them in context. 2.5.23. Material activities are caused by the mahatattvas being agitated. So mahatattva, to our understanding, that's the whole thing. Everything is the mahatattva, and it's like everything is America, you know, or say Earth. Everything is Earth, you know, like that. Yeah. But what's America? Well, it's a part of the Earth. And so in the beginning there was just Earth. There was no America. There was just the world. So in the beginning there's the mahatattva. And material activities, which is way down there, you know, we're going to have, I guess, you know, actually it's not way down there. Okay. Material activities are caused by the mahatattvas being agitated. At first, there is transformation of the modes of goodness and passion. And later, due to the mode of ignorance, matter, its knowledge, and different activities of material knowledge come into play. Okay, yeah. So this all sounds like it's kind of like in the mode of ignorance, you know. But on the other hand, it was more like, you know, the knowledge might be in the mode of goodness, activities in the mode of passion, and matter in the mode of ignorance. It's just kind of hard to match them up. You know? But sometimes what it is, it's all in the mode of ignorance, but it's knowledge in the mode of ignorance, it's passion in the mode of ignorance, goodness in the mode of ignorance. So it gets a little complicated like that. Okay. But we got to have three things. We got to have knowledge, and then activities, and then matter is produced. It seems as kind of the ordered structure there. 24. The self-centered materialistic ego, thus being transformed into three features, becomes known as the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance in three divisions. Oh my goodness, okay. So each of those is in three divisions? Or the self-centered materialistic ego is in three divisions. This is why the Nectar of Devotion, Dhanadhara Maharaj's book, Waves of Devotion, is so useful. Because these things are very analytical, you know, and you really got to like almost put them into hard visual graphs. Because in three divisions, does it mean the ego is in three divisions, or each of these things is in three divisions? No. Namely, the powers that evolve matter, knowledge of material creation, and the intelligence that guides such materialistic activities. Okay. Narada, you are quite competent to understand this, but Hanumanta Shakswami, you may have a little trouble. Okay. 2.5.25. From the darkness of false ego, the first of the five elements, namely, the sky is generated. You know? So we're thinking of matter. I'm thinking of matter right away as stones. Like the Prabhu was talking about Sridhara Maharaj. Sridhara Maharaj is an example of stone. You know, Sridhara Maharaj. But before we get down to that level, you know, we're talking about the first element, which is sky. Its subtle form is the quality of sound, exactly as the seer is in relationship with the scene, you know. So sound creates space, yeah, sky, space, you know. And of course, these English words and stuff like that, you know, are very difficult in our common colloquial usage, and probably even in the scientific usage. You know, I don't think any physicist would talk about sky, you know, like that, you know. And so we have to raise a whole job to adjudicate what Prabhupada was talking about, you know, with our Western lexicon, you know, how we say these words. But as far as our understanding goes, the first gross element, because the cell elements, of course, are ego, I identify with this world, Buddhi intelligence, I have an attitude towards it, you know, I understand it, okay? And then manas, I think about it, I make my plans, you know, I have my evaluation of it, then I make some willing. And the willing, then I create matter, you know, like that, you know. So again, that means agitation of the pradhan, which is always there with Mahavishnu. But now that things are starting to become agitated by the desires of the jiva, which are then manifest as the activity of the paramatma then, you know, makes those real, you know, like a daddy, you know. And so then the Mahatattva, this is how we understand it. The Mahatattva, the Pradhan, when it's in the mode of ignorance, agitated by the Paramatma, who then produces time, you know, Rajas, Sattva, and Tamas, then it's agitated, and then we start to produce gross elements. And by the words elements, we don't mean oxygen, hydrogen, helium. We mean like the elements of a good birthday party. The elements of a good Sunday feast, okay? So the elements of the material world, the first gross element is space. You know, everybody has to occupy space. And in many very interesting studies in this by, what's the guy's name? E.T. Hall and other people. If you go to any library that has the Library of Congress system, I will now give you a secret mantra. B-F-4-6-9. Just try to go to the library catalog and put in that catalog number. B as in boy, F as in Friday, 4-6-9. And you'll be surprised what kind of books you find. Very, very interesting. Yeah, okay. So first, space is created. And different cultures have different kinds of space. Some people use polar geometry. Some people use rectilinear geometry. And a lot of studies. And then space then is there. This is here. This is there. This is there. This is so-and-so. You know, okay. And this is created by sound. But what is sound? Okay, so it's interesting. It has some correspondence. So we apply this very practically. You can see that a kirtan is going on. Hari bol, 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 hari bol. You know, and with the kartals, which means to make time, kartal, and the vedanga, one of the most important things is to make time. You know, and by having time, then we can create space—a space for everything, a space for the hari bols, a space for the, you know, this and that—and we can all fit in that space together. You know. And then what do we do next? You know, the first practical result of chanting is dancing. Then there's a tactile thing. So sound is actually creating the space for things to occupy. Next slide. Number 6. Because sky is transformed, the air is generated. Okay, air, prana, touch, with the quality of touch. And by previous succession, the air is full of sound, and the basic principles of duration of life, which are sense perception, mental power, and bodily strength, and probably again specific Sanskrit terms. So another way of translating this is texture. Now we got a space, we got a form. We got a form. This goes here, that goes there. Okay. And then now it starts to have texture, you know. My space, this is the room, this is the wall. I can swing around and dance and jump in the room, but I don't want to swing around and dance and jump against the wall. I don't want to slip and have my teeth encounter the floor at a high velocity, you know. So time, space, movement, texture. And texture is defined as hard and soft, hot and cold. Okay. Okay, so then when the air is transformed in the course of time and nature's course, fire is generated, taking shape with a sense of touch and sound. Now, shape is already here as far as I understand. Like, you know, space has a shape, texture has a shape, you know, because of space. And then finally, the actual thing, I think I've seen probably use the words one time, is that when fire is added, color is added. I think it's a more accurate description when we were talking about it. So at this level, you know, one thing is being produced after another. We belong to this world. We belong to the Western Hemisphere. And now we're belonging to North America. Okay. Yeah. Now, North America, you know, has the qualities of the Western Hemisphere. It has the qualities of this world. You know. But it's still this world, still North, still, you know. So when fire is generated, we have color, red, pink, pop-up pink, like that. We saw aquamarine blue, you know, all these kind of things, Kelly green, you know. So we have all these colors. And if you ever work in theater or in drama, they have these books for the colors, you know, because you can use different kind of color lightings. There's two systems. You know, D25, D27, D78, and the different kinds of filters you can order. But if you look at each of the books, somebody went through and put these really, you know, incredible names to them. Pop up pink, alligator green. You know, it's really funny, exciting. You know, so okay, because within the color, wow, color. Okay, within the color is a texture, like that. You know. And within the texture is a certain form and space. Since fire is also transformed, there is manifestation of water full of juice and taste. As previously, it also has form and touch and is also full of sound. And water being transformed from all variegatedness on earth appears odorous and has previously becomes qualitatively full of juice, touch, sound, form, and respectively. So that's what we mean by earth. It's a different definition. You know, earth is something you can rub between your fingers. It has a texture, it has a flavor, a color, a smell, like that. And it takes up space in a different way. Hills, mountains, valleys, ravines, like that. Yeah. So different analysis, you know, of the world than we have. And very practical in terms of going into Ayurveda, Gandharva Veda, Vastu Veda, you know, Danda Veda. These are detailed applications of the general philosophy of nature. And it's nice learning it here because we'll hear more about it. Brahma gives basically almost the whole entire rest of the second canto is filled up with this description of nature, science, cosmology, philosophy of nature. And Prabhupada, of course, again and again, keeps emphasizing the spiritual nature of the material nature, its perspective. Let's go on to slide number 7. Yeah. And here we have a beautiful clip art from, what you call that place? I have a beautiful parrot here. Okay. And of course, in Bhagavad Gita, this basic thing is there. Bhumir, apo, nalo, vayu, kamano, bhuyar, eva, cha, ahankara, etiyam, me, bina, prakritir, ashtada. And so this is a complete basic summary of the whole thing. Here you see the hierarchy, Bhumir, the earth, Apo, water, Analo, Sangsara, Dav, Anala, yeah, fire, Vayu, air, Kam, space, Mano, mind, buddhi, intelligence, Eva, certainly, Cha, and Ahankar, false ego, Ityam, these are separated energies, 8. These are my separated, Bina Prakritir. It's a very nice verse. Oh, got a phone call coming in. Okay. Okay. I hope you can still hear me. We had a phone call coming in there. I said ignore it.
Everything's okay, Maya. We hear you.
Okay. Okay, so then we go back to today's verse, which says, this is slide number 8. From the mode of goodness, the mind is generated and becomes manifested, as also the 10 demigods controlling the bodily movements. Such demigods are known as the controllers of the directions, air, sun, Prajapati, Kumaras, Brahma, etc. Then Prabhupada's purport. Okay. Vaikarika is the neutral stage of creation, and Tejas is the initiative of creation. So it sounds like goodness and passion. Well, Tamas is the full display of material creation under the spell of the darkness of ignorance. So looking out my window, I see a Penske rental truck, a flatbed truck going by, all on Medical Center driveway. I see the new lobster store being built across the street, a water tower. This is all in the mode of ignorance. It's all visual. Hearing it is just kind of like, you can hear it. You can hear it there, I'm probably pretty sure. So kind of like a river or something, you know? Yeah? Yeah. And so that's more subtle. But the mind is, I'm looking at things, this and that, analyzing them, thinking about them, so forth, so on. But behind that is just the mode of goodness, that it just exists, and it has its perspective, you know, like that, you know? And so we're so stupid, we don't even think of that as matter, but it is matter. And the Bhagavatam gives very good description of it. As we begin to appreciate it, we become detached from the mode of ignorance and see things from a more broader perspective. Okay? While Tamas is the full creation. Manufacture of the necessities of life, the Prabhupada says, quote, manufacture of the necessities of life in factories. And fact means to make, by the way. Manufacture means to make by hand. In factories and workshops, excessively prominent in the age of Kali or in the age of the machine, is the summit stage of the quality of darkness. Such manufacturing enterprises by human society are in the mode of darkness because factually there is no necessity for the commodities manufactured. Slide 10. Yeah. Human society primarily requires food for subsistence, shelter for sleeping, defense, for protection, yeah, and commodities for satisfaction of the senses. There were these people, engineering students. They took like 4x8 pieces of plywood, and they put them on some simple construction blocks. And they had a 4x8 foot bottom, and then the sides were, I think, 4 foot wide, and 8 foot long, and a 4x8 foot top. That could be tilted up to give a little ventilation air. And they painted them with, varnish like that. They put them here and there, and homeless people started moving in. and they had what they needed. They had a very simple, structure so they could sleep, and so they could be a little bit defended this way and that way, And then the city didn't like it, this and that stuff, but it was a very simple, humble, place for homeless people. If you didn't want more than a 4x8 foot space where you could sit up, and you couldn't do too much mischief, even if you set your house on fire so much, they put them in fields and that. It's a very simple solution, to the homeless problem. That's all we need. Number 11. The senses are the practical signs of life, as will be explained in the next verse. Human civilization is meant for purifying the senses, and the objects of sense satisfaction should be supplied as much as absolutely required, but not for aggravating artificial sensory needs. Yeah. Yeah. Can see that. No, you eat to a certain amount, it's enough, but then I can aggravate my senses so they'll demand more, and then I can serve them. Aha, I'm a good servant. Food, shelter, defense, and sensei gratification. Okay, food, shelter, defense, and sense gratification are all needs in material existence. Eating, sleeping, defending, and probably says sense gratification, but here it means, usually say mating. Yeah. Are all needs of material existence. Otherwise, in his pure, uncontaminated state of original life, the living entity has no such needs. Yeah. The needs are therefore artificial. And in the pure state of life, there are no such needs. As such, increasing the artificial needs, as is the standard of material civilization, or advancing the economic development of human society, is a sort of engagement in darkness, without knowledge. By such engagement, human energy is spoiled, because human energy is primarily meant for purifying the senses in order to engage them in satisfying the senses of the Lord. Yeah. The Supreme Lord, being the supreme possessor of spiritual senses, is the master of the senses. Hrishikesha. Hrishika. Hrishika means the senses, and Isha means the master. Of course, this verse comes to mind right away. Sarvopadi vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmalam Hrishikesha Hrishikena sevanam bhaktir uchate. And of course, it's cited as one of the basic verses for the whole basis for Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. 13. The Lord is not the servant of the senses, or in other words, he is not directed by the dictation of the senses, but the conditioned souls or the living entities are servants of the senses. They are conducted by the direction or dictation of the senses. And therefore, material civilization is a kind of engagement in sense gratification only. If you go to any big supermarket in the West, I mean, it's just unbelievable the varieties. Like, I mean, there's ice cream. Okay, ice cream. But then there's pistachio butternut. There's crumple crinkle French chocolate, something. Less than and something, It's unbelievable. You just take the varieties of ice cream, Yeah. And then, for example, I couldn't believe it. One time I realized in one Walgreens or whatever the thing was, how many varieties of lipstick there were. It was unbelievable, Yeah. So the whole thing is this satisfaction of the senses. The standard of human civilization should be to cure the disease of sense gratification. And one can do this simply by becoming an agent for satisfying the spiritual senses of the Lord. Okay. Tickle me. Give me a milkshake. Take me for a pony ride. Yeah. And for that, of course, deity worship is incredible. For the Grihastha, Prabhupada said, is an absolute necessity. If a Grihastha does not worship the deity according to his means, he is 100% guaranteed to fall down, because the bodily concept is so strong. But for brahmacharya sannyasi, they can more appreciate the paramatma, and they can appreciate when the Lord is happy, with certain kinds of events and things like that. Let's move ahead here. Slide number 14. The senses are never to be stopped in their engagements. Okay, that's good. But one should purify them by engaging them in the pure service of sense gratification of the master of the senses. Yes. This is the instruction of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna wanted first of all to satisfy his own senses by his decision not to fight with his kinsmen and friends. But Lord Sri Krishna taught him the Bhagavad Gita just to purify Arjuna's decision for sense gratification. Therefore, Arjuna agreed to satisfy the senses of the Lord, unless he fought the battle of Kurukshetra as the Lord desired. Slide 15. The Vedas instruct us to get out of the existence of darkness and go forward on the path of light. Tamasi Ma Jyotirgam. Everybody should memorize this, of course. Tamasi, I guess, means of the dark, and Ma means not. You know? Jyotir, light, Gam, go. Yeah. Of course, we're discussing the transformation of the mode of goodness then generates the 10 deities like that, you know, controlling the senses. So here we're talking about engaging the senses. The path of light is therefore to satisfy the senses of the Lord. Misguided men or less intelligent men, yep, that's me, follow the path of self-realization without any attempt to satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord by following the path shown by Arjuna and other devotees. On the contrary, they artificially try to stop the activities of the senses, yoga system, or they deny the transcendental senses of the Lord, jnana system. Yeah. And of course, Prabhupada is not mentioning the people like myself who try and follow the path of religion for sense gratification. The purpose of offering the banana to Krishna is so I can eat it and enjoy without sinful reactions. Yeah. The devotees, however, slide 16, are above the yogis and jnanis because pure devotees do not deny the senses of the Lord. They want to satisfy the senses of the Lord only because of the darkness of ignorance do the yogis and jnanis deny the senses of the Lord and thus artificially try to control the activities of the disease senses. Text 17. In the diseased condition of the senses, there is too much engagement of the senses in increasing material needs. When one comes to see the disadvantage of aggravating the sense activities, one is called a jnani. You know? So it's kind of strange, but the Buddhist phrase, it always hits me. One who knows when enough is enough will always have enough. You know? In this whole activity, there's this strange thing that when you eat, you're not satisfied until you've eaten too much. That's at least my body. Probably because my body is in the mode of ignorance and goodness and passion. Yeah. Yeah. Other people's bodies who are born in the mode of goodness, they probably feel more like when they're satisfied, that's enough. For myself, usually what it is, and you know, Prabhupada says we should fill the hungry belly half of what it'll take. Then one quarter water, one quarter air. So for me, it's a conscious effort to stop, you know, eating, stop the senses. And I know, I tell them, within 10 minutes, you're going to be satisfied. You know? But if I don't and go on till they are satisfied, then in 10 minutes, they're in distress. So I begin to see, my intelligence begins to see the negative aspect of all of this. You know? And so I become a jnani, a wise man. And when one tries to stop the activities of the senses by the practice of yogic principles, Srila Prabhupada says, he is called a yogi. But when one is fully aware of the transcendental senses of the Lord and tries to satisfy his senses, yeah, one is called a devotee of the Lord. A nice picture up here of senses. Text slide 18. Yeah. And here we took out this one point. Fully aware of the transcendental senses of the Lord. Okay. Yeah. And tries to satisfy his senses. So this is the kind of the trick, you know, because if we have a kind of a theoretical knowledge of our deities and this and that, okay. But if we're fully aware of the transcendental senses of the Lord, you know, we really have to feel that Krishna is tasting this. I've heard that Mother Yashoda, somebody asked Nanda Maharaj, how's your little boy? How's Krishna? And he said, oh, he's very, very nice, you know. He said, but he's so sensitive. He says he likes his sweet rice just a certain way, just a certain amount of sugar and this thing and so forth, so on, you know. And he says he doesn't complain, But I can see, like, when things are a little bit not proper, he really, really suffers, you know. So we have that mercy of really experiencing Krishna's senses and become fully aware of the transcendental senses of the Lord, and then try to satisfy them. You know, then we can be keep the spiritual position. Krishna keeps coming up with new and newer, you know, creative desires and ways to play, so that we then have no space or time to be attracted by Maya. Okay, I think this is the last slide here. Yeah, it is. Number 19. Last of the purport. The devotees of the Lord do not try to deny the senses of the Lord, nor do they artificially stop the actions of the senses, but they do voluntarily engage the purified senses in the service, in the service of the master of the senses, as was done by Arjuna. So purify the senses, chant Hare Krishna. Follow the four principles. We do that because by restraining ourselves from these things, the senses become purified, detached from matter, and then we can chant Hare Krishna effectively in a way that pleases Krishna. You know? I'm sure everybody knows, you know, that sometimes you hear people chanting and it's actually really disturbing, you know, because they're engaged in gross activities. And their chanting is gross and violent and, you know, and stimulating the body in a distorting way. You know, so after you become a devotee for a while, hearing this kind of chanting really, you know, we had a program here, and it's one group of people, they chant, have a kirtan thing, but it's very much mixed up with, you know, sahajya things of sex and so on. Now, not gross, I mean, like publicly, but there are like a lot of this and that going on here and there amongst the group. So two different sannyasis went there. They invited the program, and then they came out. And afterwards, you know, one of them said, "My God, I want to take a bath," like that. And it was after a kirtan of the Maha Mantra. You know, and the other one said they made the same comment almost exactly. I didn't go, just different time like that. You know, so yeah. But without following the four principles, you know, then coming to that point, then we are going to be absorbed in matter, and we won't be able to, you know, please the Lord with our senses. Thereby, we can easily attain the perfection of satisfying the Lord, the ultimate goal of perfection. Last slide. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. On our webpage, www.jayarama.us. So, any questions, complaints, donations?
Maharaj, just a moment.
Okay.
Wonderful class, Maharaj. Thank you. Anyone have anything, David?
I guess I'm trying to talk loud because this microphone thing, I feel like I'm yelling at everybody. Can you fix this? Like a Baptist preacher or something.
Maharaj, Dandavats.
Hare Krishna.
That was funny at the end, donations. That was good.
I'll send you our address.
If I had one, you know, one thing to change in Prabhupada's books, it would be the formatting or the reformatting of these long paragraphs. And when you divide it like you did in the slides in chunks, it becomes a lot easier to assimilate. So I appreciated the slideshow.
I think sometimes too that, you know, right in the middle of a paragraph there should be a paragraph break, uh-huh. And sometimes when there is a paragraph break, it's not, there shouldn't be, because the same idea is going on like that, you know.
Right. Well, when I write emails, I break it up into chunks, you know, two or three, at the most, three sentences, and I find that it seems to be more accessible when you do that, what you're talking about.
I think also because we have smaller intelligence. Prabhupada is using a 64-bit parallel processor, and we're using a 2-bit processor.
Right. Yeah. So part of the presentation this morning, Srila Prabhupada's railing against the unnecessary you know, sense gratification, creating all these unnecessary things that are not real needs. And that, and that's the, basically the basis, the foundation for capitalism. But when I was looking at this purport, I was reminded of just a few days ago, I was coming back from India, and I'm going through these major airports, and they have these duty-free shops. And it's just the extreme example of excesses, you know, these duty-free shops. There's hardly anything in there that's needed for anybody. But it's, you know, it's all this, the attraction is you're going to duck the tax by buying the thing in the duty-free shop. And they also get into larger packaging, like, a pound of chocolate, which would normally be a small chocolate bar, is now, you know, 5 pounds with the wrapper on it, you know. So, anyway, it just struck me, the duty-free shops. It's just an extreme example of
me too.
Where things have gone.
Because the bizarre thing is, of course, is that, you know, our whole idea, the whole idea of Arjuna and the Bhagavad Gita is to do things so that they're duty-free, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that the duty-free shops, in terms of Krishna consciousness, are producing the most duty, right? You get more karma for those shops than you do for an ordinary shop. Instead of getting the karma for one chocolate bar, you get the karma for eating 5 pounds of chocolate, you know? Instead of getting the karma for drinking one shot of whiskey, you get the karma for buying a whole 2-gallon bottle or something.
Right.
And the only thing I've ever found maybe useful is if I'm starving to death, sometimes, like, I got this thing where I'm 36 hours in transit or something, then the only thing possible thing to eat is sometimes is M&M's chocolate peanuts. the only edible, you know, food in the entire duty-free, you know, thing like that, you know.
Hmm.
I agree with this. For me, too, I've also been struck by the things. But they seem to be prosperous. I mean, you know, this is, you know, people are, why would they be there unless people are buying them, that kind of stuff? You know, it's incredible, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe the greatest example of this is duty-free shops and airports. People with a lot of time, also bored, you know. So they're walking around looking to, you know, to satisfy their mind. Yeah.
And lots of money.
Yeah, exactly, and buying stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Maharaj, when you speak to more intellectual audiences,
I don't. This is one of the most intellectual audiences I know on the planet.
Do you use Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's description, where he says, instead of earth, water, fire, he says liquid, solid, gases, radiant energy, and space? Have you found that is easier for people to relate to?
I've never heard about it before.
Oh, really?
Where's that from?
Oh, Ravindra Sarup. Many times he points that out, that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he would use those terms instead when he would speak to Western audiences, because it was kind of like easier for them to relate to. Yeah, he said instead of earth, water, fire, and he would say solid, liquid, gases, radiant energy, and space.
Ah, very nice. Yeah. That's the whole thing, is to put it in the right language. You know, everybody has their lexicon, their way of saying things. It's called jargon or diction. And it's the same thing, but people just, you know, everybody has their poetry. You know, because, you know, Swami Damodar Maharaj, he would, like, put things into the language of chemists, which is different than the language of physicists, the soul and everything else. And then you can see it was that they could appreciate it like that, you know. The sun, he would talk about how the soul gets entangled in the body, but he was using the example of free radical oxygen, like that. And then they can understand that, it's not the same. You know, the oxygen is bound there, but a guy who knows how to do it can separate them. But for all practical purposes, an ordinary person is going to see that compound as being
your
one thing.
Test is like a mirror.
Yeah. So when they would hear that, know, then they would like say, oh, okay, now we see, yeah, a soul. There could be a soul, and it could be so tied up. Okay, yeah. So yeah, the whole thing is to find the language, you know, or know your group, because not everybody can talk to everybody. My God, yeah.
Does anybody have anything else? It's a great class.
Everybody's ready to go out and make a cake now, like that. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. And what do you have? You have a cake, and you can go offer it to your crow. Yeah.
Well, Marsh, I don't.
Okay.
There are any takers?
So back home, back to Godhead.
All right. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for your association.
Thank you all.
It was a wonderful class.
Yeah, for me, every time I'm doing this, it becomes a little clearer myself. And also the thing is, when you talk about it like this, it does change your perception of the world. You know, like I say now, I can definitely see that the world, the gross world is not as real as it was to me, you know, years ago, because now I'm always seeing things like with this more subtle, you know, nature to it. And of course, when we actually see it related to Krishna, you know, the flowers are Krishna trying to smile at us, you know, the wind is purification, all the automobiles going outside here and there is, you know, is the ability in man,
mm-hmm.
is Krishna, you know. So we see all these examples, nature changes. Yes.
Yes, Maharaj, can you hear me?
Yes, who is this?
It's difficult to hear if you could talk louder.
I have typed the question instead, if it is difficult to hear.
Prabhu, I didn't see. You did type the question. But we can hear you pretty good. Why don't you go ahead and ask Harsh Prabhu?
Okay, thank you for the nice class, Maharaj. It's late night here. I was just reading Krishna book around 3 hours back. It says there that Krishna gave opulence to Dhamma and he enjoyed it as mercy. So is there something wrong in such enjoyment?
If Krishna would give you the facilities, what would you like to do for Krishna?
Okay. But when I read that, it said that he enjoyed that as mercy. That's what I read.
Yeah. But it's there's two kinds of Shakti. Radharani, when Krishna says, oh, Radharani, can you celebrate my birthday party? Then Radharani says, wow, what mercy. You know, Krishna asked us to organize a birthday party, you know. Or can you help me celebrate my mother Yashoda's birthday party? Okay, it's mercy. And it's an opportunity and it's a facility, you know. The other kind of Shakti is like Kubja, who wants to enjoy Krishna. It's like somebody who only wants to enjoy prasadam, but they want to enjoy it. They won't eat anything else, but when they want prasadam, they want prasadam which will gratify their senses. So Krishna associates with that kind of Shakti, Kubja, sometimes. You know, and it's a kind of Krishna consciousness, but only sometimes. When we take the prasad as an opportunity to serve Krishna, you know, and enjoy it that way, then Krishna always associates with that. So Brahma, maybe he has a little bit of this separate enjoying spirit, but maybe more than that, he thinks, okay, Krishna gave me this opportunity, you know, to do this and that for him. So then he takes the prasad in that way and he enjoys it that way. Is that okay?
Okay, I got that. And I was also thinking this, that Krishna is a dominator, and we as his son also have this dominating propensity. So how do we use this dominating propensity?
To engage things in Krishna's service. Yeah. You know, Ram was the king.
That means matter only?
Means what?
That means we can only arrange matter? That means we can only arrange matter for him?
No. You know, you're the husband. You should dominate your wife and children. They should do what you say. Like that. Yes, Prabhu. Yeah. Yeah, and so, and people love to be predominated, You know, it's a whole combination of this way, that way, this way, that way. Okay, you know, yeah. But yeah, then we have this dominating tendency. And so then the same way too, you know, women want to dominate their children, you know, you do this, do that, you know. But when we do it all for Krishna, then everybody is happy to be predominated, you know. And in the spiritual world, we actually want to be in the predominated position more and more, because then we can be focused more and more on doing something for Krishna, like that, you know. So predominate for
okay,
Krishna.
Got that.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. I just sent a letter to you, a copy of a letter that we sent to Dr. Samaresh Bandopadhyay.
Yeah, I got that.
Can you hear me?
I'm getting echo, co.
Right. You got that?
Hello, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Okay, so I guess it's 12 o'clock, so I guess we'll go ahead and our next program here of arranging Lord Nisringadev's lunch. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. Very nice. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Hi.